I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's get this started with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan. Hey, listen, I went to the doctor. I asked him if the spots in my chest were chicken pox or measles. He said he never makes rash decisions. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks again to Duff McKagan for making us laugh, as he does each and every week. And thanks to everyone who already got their tickets for Fozzy's upcoming Save the World Tour. We are hitting the road again March 31st, starting off in Detroit, Rock City. We're heading right across the country, Connecticut, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Texas, Nevada, California, Colorado. We're going everywhere, man. Get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget about our VIP meet and greet. It's legendary, and it's a lot of fun. We're doing those as well. We play a mini set for you, songs that you won't hear later that night. There are tickets available, VIPs available. Get all of that at FozzyRock.com as we get ready to release our next single in just a few weeks. So keep that in mind as well. And don't forget to get on the mailing list to book a cabin for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Four Leaf Clover. We are now setting sail February 2nd, 2023. We're going to our own private island for the first time ever on the cruise. We've got a killer lineup of talent. You can check it out when you sign up for the mailing list at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, today on the show, one of the Jackass originals, one of the biggest movie in the country last week, talking about Jackass Forever, and I'm talking about Steve-O. Steve-O is here talking about the brand new movie. Fans love it, critics love it. Steve says he and the guys had a blast making it. We had some difficulties with the recording. Missed about the first 23 minutes of the conversation. It's ridiculous that I've done almost 850 episodes and basically forgot to press record on StreamYard. So I am a human being. I screwed it up in 23 minutes in. I was at a heart attack when I realized we weren't recording. My audio was recording, but his was not. So we are going to kind of, I'm going to give you a little bit of a brief overview of what Steve said in the first 23 minutes of the conversation, which you did not hear. And by the way, the last 55 minutes were amazing. He was a talkative guy, so I kept him on a little longer. Of course, I didn't tell him that I didn't press record, but I got to be professional, right, at all times. But Steve, once again, we talked about Jackass Forever and how it was the number one movie, which he was very proud of. He was also talking about how they didn't know if they wanted to come back to do another Jackass because he said he didn't want to be like one of those old movie stars who was holding on too long. He mentioned Buster Keaton and he mentioned Charlie Chaplin and how those guys did their same stunts when they were in their 50s and 60s and how it was getting a little bit sad to see them do that. He said he did not want Jackass to become a parody of itself, but he also said that bringing in the new blood help them get over that fear. That's why you see some new people, some new guys on the show, new cast members, because they want to kind of freshen it up. And he said it's possible that the Jackass franchise could live on forever just by getting new blood in there. He also said that they had so much fun, and I mentioned how everybody laughs whenever they do a stunt. He said they call that the peanut gallery, and that's part of what they do is just make sure no matter what happens, everybody's just howling about how they do the stunt. And if they don't laugh, they don't expect anybody else is going to laugh as well. I went and saw the movie with my son Ash, and the one stunt that got us both is when they put an enormous queen bee on Steve-O's junk and had thousands of bees join the party on his unit. Steve said that he got stung at least a dozen times, but he said that usually bees are very complacent as long as you don't panic. So he stood there completely naked and let these bees just swarm all over his wiener. And he said they started stinging him, especially in his ball region, his ball bag, as soon as they released on him. He said he didn't want to panic because he didn't want to freak out the rest of the bees. So once again, that was kind of the brief synopsis of everything, and talking about, you know, the movie and how they had to film it during COVID, and they had to stop it and had to start it. But the best part of the conversation is coming up for you right now. Steve-O talking about his worst injuries, his gnarliest stunts and bits, the guy's chemistry, Bam Margera, why he wasn't there, working with director Spike Jonze, graduating from the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Clown College and working as a circus clown before Jackass. I never knew that. Crazy illegal stunts he pretty much does for his YouTube channel, where we first met in Wales. The new book he has coming out in September called A Hard Kick in the Nuts, What I've Learned from a Lifetime of Bad Decisions. And the Bucket List Tour, which is his latest stand-up comedy tour that he's doing right now. Steve-O.com for all the information and all the tickets. All right, let's get to the conversation with Steve-O. We are picking it up with Steve-O explaining how Big Brother Skateboarding Magazine founder Steve Rocco is actually the one responsible for putting the Jackass guys together in the first place.
He sent this ad for World Industries into the big magazines of skateboarding, which were Thrasher and Transworld. The ad was just a picture of like a little kid, maybe a 12-year-old kid, holding a gun in his mouth. Mm-hmm. And it said, World Industries, kill yourself. And that was just the ad. And that was like par for the course for Steve Rocco, this guy. And what happened was that both Thrasher and Transworld magazines sent that ad back to Steve Rocco of World Industries. They said, there's no way we're running that ad in our magazines. And Steve Rocco, being the guy who he was like, oh yeah, you don't like that? Well, then how about this? He's like, I'm never going to run any more ads in Thrasher or Transworld. Like, screw you guys. Like, I'm done with you. I'm going to start my own magazine. And that was how Big Brother started. He started Big Brother magazine, like, out of that whole situation. And so from its inception, Big Brother magazine was really like kind of designed to be a forum for filth that would never be allowed in Thrasher or Transworld. And that was kind of why it was what it was. That was why it was so reckless. It was so crazy. And that's why it had this kind of cult following. And Johnny Knoxville came into the picture, I think in like 1996, he came into the picture. He'd been in California trying to make it as a movie star, and it wasn't really kind of panning out. And he had a kid on the way, and he, really wanted to make things happen. So he came up with this idea to do a product review on self-defense equipment, where he was going to start off with red pepper spray, like point blank sprayed into his eyes, and the stun gun, the taser gun. And then he was going to put on a bulletproof vest and shoot himself with a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson handgun. And he pitched this idea pretty far and wide, like, you know, the Howard Stern show, the late night talk shows, like, all of it. And everybody everywhere wanted no part in his self-defense product review, except for Big Brother magazine, which he pitched the idea to. And Jeff Tremaine from Big Brother said, yeah, dude, we'll do that, but go ahead and film it too. Because Big Brother also made skateboarding videos, which kind of, it was like the companion to all the print issues of the magazine, right? You know, like every so often a video would come out and you would see the actual footage, like bringing all the photos of the magazine and the stories to life. Right. And it was just full of crazy crap, man. And Knoxville was in there. I was in there. Wee Man Pontius. That was what brought us together, was Big Brother magazine. And at a certain point, the director, Jeff Tremaine, you know, Jeff Tremaine was the editor in chief of Big Brother. actor, and Steve Rocco sold it to Larry Flint. Yeah, Larry Flint bought Big Brother magazine because he saw it as a real First Amendment thing that he was particularly into. And that's when Jeff Tremaine became the editor-in-chief of Big Brother, and they kept making the videos. And the videos got very popular just because they were loaded with such crazy shit. And Jeff Tremaine reached out to Spike Jonze and said, you know, man, everybody loves our videos so much, but I really don't think anybody cares about the skateboarding. And I believe if we subtract the skateboarding from the Big Brother videos, then what's left over could be a TV show. And these guys, Jeff Tremaine and Spike Jonze, had known each other since Spike was 12. Literally, they grew up together in Maryland, and they came up through the skateboard industry together. Actually, Spike Jonze's very first video project ever was a World Industry skateboard video, which came out in the 80s. He wasn't even meant to be a video guy. He was Spike Jonze was a photographer for World Industries. Mm-hmm. And they set about making the skateboard video, and they had nobody to put it together. And Spike Jonze got that video project by default because there was nobody else to do it. And so that was Spike Jonze's very first video project was a skateboard video for Steve Rocco. And Jeff Tremaine was all in the mix and everything. And Spike liked the idea. So they made a little, video of the craziest, not necessarily the craziest, but the funniest stuff from Big Brother videos and just edited together a little reel, which they sent to, they took a few meetings and MTV was very into it. And so that's how Jackass started. And then there's also Bam on the East Coast. He wasn't part of the Big Brother deal. He had his own thing, which was called CKY, and his own little video series.
Yeah.
And kind of the Big Brother camps and the Big Brother and CKY, these two separate camps, is sort of, Big Brother on the West Coast and CKY on the East Coast, kind of merged together and became Jackass. And I never even met Bam until we were filming the second season of Jackass. Like, we all filmed our stuff all
separately. In different places, right?
Yeah, and it all just kind of came together as this sort of, there were not really any like proper ensemble pieces until the second season. So yeah, we were already like properly famous before I ever met Bam.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So when this first started, did you guys have the chemistry right out of the gate of how you were going to put the show together? Because it was huge right out of the bat from what I remember.
For sure. Yeah. It, within the first 2 weeks, it was the highest ratings MTV had ever had.
Wow.
Certainly not for like VMAs or anything, but as far as like half an hour programming that was made that way, we set the record for the highest ratings that they'd ever had. And certainly we had the chemistry right away because we all just have that, same kind of sensibility. The chemistry was there from the start, but what the show was going to look like nobody knew what the format necessarily was in the beginning. Like when we were shooting the pilot, they had Knoxville interviewing us, and they didn't know if it was kind of looked like some kind of a weird, dumb talk show or what, So Spike was the one who was like, dude, stop trying to make it special for TV. It is what it is. It's a bunch of dumb shit thrown together bit after bit after bit. Like, it doesn't need a desk and a host.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. And so we didn't know what it was necessarily when we started, but the chemistry was there, and it kind of figured itself out.
How was it for you, because we mentioned how big Jackass was right out of the bat, how was it for you becoming basically an instant celebrity and being kind of on top of the world so quickly?
It was gnarly, man. Like, before that, I was a circus clown.
And wow.
I was a circus clown at a flea market circus when the pilot got ordered. I had graduated from Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Clown College, it was a pretty big deal. And you being from Tampa, I'm probably like aware of that because it was in Sarasota.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I went to Clown College in 1997. And, I had various jobs as a circus clown. I went from sort of a drug dealer to a circus clown to a guy on MTV. And, when I filmed the first season for Jackass, I was working in the circus. But by the time it came out, I had been fired from that circus. And I had been kicked out of my sister's house where I'd been living. And, I was broke. I was homeless. I was unemployed. And overnight, I was like a celebrity on the biggest show on MTV. And it was pretty wild, man. I was like quite literally couch surfing as, this like tidal wave of fame struck me. And, I think that anybody who sort of becomes like famous on any level, I think that there are inherent growing pains that come with it. I certainly took advantage of the attention from the women, like that,
of course.
I was definitely I acted out a lot with sex and with drugs. And I think kind of comes with the territory. I abused the privilege, I took advantage of all the opportunities that came with it. And, fortunately I made it through those growing pains ultimately without, blowing anything too bad,
Right.
Well, that's what happens. You're a young guy with quick fame and lots of money. It goes that way.
I had the quick fame. The lots of money was a little bit tougher with the lots of money was a little bit tougher. But yeah, it came slowly but surely. It came, and I did start like my own little tour, and I was like. I was able to make some money, but I certainly wasn't like, it wasn't what people think it might be. And whatever the norm is, it was below that too, because we got like notoriously bad deals.
Let's talk a little about Clown College. What exactly do you do at Clown College, and what were some of your experiences as a clown? I've never met anybody who went to Clown College before.
Yeah, it was Clown College was more like boot camp than college. I mean, it was an 8-week program. It was a total of 2 months. It was arguably much harder to get into Clown College than to get through Clown College. It was you had to audition to even get an application. And, based on how many applicants there were, it was statistically harder to get into Clown College than Harvard, like by quite a bit.
Wow.
Yeah. Only 33 clowns were accepted, and they held auditions in 100 different cities to do it.
Wow.
And, they only gave out applications at the auditions. So it was the only way you could apply was to audition. And I had dropped out of college to try to become a crazy famous stuntman with my home video camera. I wanted to just film crazy wild shit. And I wasn't really finding a lot of success doing that. So when I found out about Clown College, I thought that to graduate from there would make me a trained circus professional, and that might help get me some traction and some momentum towards my goal of becoming a stuntman. And it worked kind of on that level. Certainly the Big Brother magazine people thought it was hilarious that I was this Yeah, alcoholic clown dipshit that set himself on fire all the time. So yeah, it definitely opened doors, you know. It endeared me to the Big Brother guys. But yeah, in clown college, I mean, dude, it was grueling, man. We trained for like 14 hours a day. It was like in the gymnasium at 8 a.m. We would have like hour-long classes throughout the day in like different subjects, like acrobatics for an hour, and then dance for an hour, and then like skills, we even had like some classes in circus history and improv, and it's like all these different components. Very interesting, and then we would do that until like 6 p.m. and then it was more like elective stuff where you would work on putting together your act for that week's performance. And every week there was a performance, and then ultimately at the end of clown college there was a gala performance, which the owner of the circus would come to and select just 10 clowns for for contracts with the circus. So it was a little bit like, I mean, it would have been a killer reality TV show if
sure,
they had
of course.
Reality, you know, because there was like backstabbing going on, you know. You might like, I wouldn't have been surprised if somebody like unplugged, you know, a clown's alarm clock so that they would sleep, like oversleep, like, you know, like that shit was totally, you know, like it was a competition, you know, it was right. basically like an elimination show, you know, only 10 of us were going to get contracts. So, I was not one of the clowns that got a contract. And then, you know, by the time I'd graduated, I was a little bit heartbroken. I had really, all I wanted to do was further my goal of becoming a crazy stuntman. But by the end of it, I had sort of fallen in love with the idea.
Of that, yeah.
And so anyways, I did other jobs. I worked as a clown on cruise ships after that. Then I worked as a clown in the flea market. I had a little bit of a clown career.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let me ask you this, though, because you mentioned, you know, talking about being a clown, which is obviously very outgoing and fearless. Being a skateboarder is very fearless. How did you, when you start getting on Jackass, and we'll talk about some of your gnarliest stunts that you've done, do you just put that out of your mind and just go for it? Is there ever any doubts in some of the things that you're doing where you kind of freak yourself out?
I mean, yeah, for sure, dude. There's, you're always going to be nervous about putting yourself in harm's way. Like, and I think that it would be very, very inaccurate to say the Jackass guys were fearless. You know, right. I think that what makes Jackass compelling is that there's not really anything particularly special about us. You know, we're not like super, like we don't have like high thresholds for pain. You know, we don't right. have, you know, we're not even like, you know, like we're very, very afraid when we're doing what we're doing. And I think that that's what makes it entertaining, is because you can see the fear, you know, you can see the reactions. But yeah, I think that's kind of like a little bit special about us, that we're just kind of like the everyman. If there's anything that sets us apart, I would say that, you know, we're pretty comfortable. We're not like trying to look cool, you know, we're not like, and we're like, we're okay with looking uncool. And I think that that's kind of endearing in its own way. But yeah, as far as just going for it, and it's not easy to go for heavy, gnarly stunts. And it's certainly not getting any easier at this age. But yeah, I think that what makes it possible for us to go through with all the tougher stuff is just the extent to which we crave attention. you know, like,
right.
Like if we have a professional title, I call it attention whore.
Right. Yeah. Well, you talked about the bees, on your dick. I mean, it's, you gotta be fearless because this is the most sensitive part of your body. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to punch me in the shoulder or whatever, but this is different and you're completely wide open. And just to reiterate this, they put the queen bee onto your unit and then they're asking the other bees and forcing them to come. Like, you mentioned you got to be calm for that, but how calm can you be when your unit is exposed?
I was trying to be calm. And like anybody who saw the movie, you know, like that was not an image of a guy, of a fearless guy.
Right.
So there's nothing fearless about it. It's just like, that's just the extent to which I think my urge for attention seeking is just that much stronger than my self-preservation instinct.
Did you look down to see that whole bushel of bees on you?
Yeah, I could see what was going on for sure.
it's like, that's the one to me where I was just like, ah. So I wrote down and pulled some of your gnarliest stunts out just to ask you about a few of them. One of the classic ones was the human shark bait. Obviously, when you're pierced the cheek with the hook, like, kind of tell us about that one and how, because that one up there still reminds me just how nuts this whole thing is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what our director calls a ready to die bit.
Right, exactly.
Like, you can only do that, like by definition, when you do that, you're saying that you're ready to die. And that was arguably one of the closer calls I had with, you know, actually potentially dying, because here, you know, the end of that scene, I'm, you know, I've got the fish hook through my face and you know, there's a, what's attracting the sharks is this guy, Manny Puig, who's sort of a legendary, you know, apex predator expert. He's got the long hair, the shark teeth around. He like lifts alligators out of the swamp. He rides sharks around out the ocean. He's just this crazy Tarzan guy. And Manny was in the water, you know, with a big knife. He's treading water. He's holding, you know, barracuda fish and just hacking them up, like to chum up the water to attract the sharks. And you know, Manny's just generally like pretty comfortable about everything, and I've got this sense of comfort. I almost consider Manny Puig to be like my force field. You know, like nothing bad can happen if Manny's around. Is just this this feeling that I always had. But as I was swimming with the fish hook and Manny's chumming, like, Manny saw, I didn't even have my head underneath the water. I was just like, you know, kind of treading water. And Manny saw this mako shark. And mako sharks are like particularly aggressive sharks. Like they're of the scarier variety. And Manny saw the mako shark going for me. And Manny freaked out, which is really scary. You know, Manny, like, as he was treading water, hacking up the sharks, I heard, "Steve-O, watch out." You know, "Steve-O, watch out." I heard Manny say that. So that made me jerk. Like, I jerk and I'm like kicking and, you know, to swim away and try and get out of the water. And in that jerking motion, I inadvertently kicked the mako shark.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, I kicked the shark, like, kind of in the head. You know, and the reason that its head was in that proximity to my foot, arguably, was that it was going for my foot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kicking it was this, like, I was reacting to Manny saying, "Steve-O, watch out." And I kicked the shark. And, you know, that was like this crazy close call moment that was right captured on camera. And, you know, all these years later, I don't know how many years later, but at some point down the line, I asked our director, Jeff Tremaine, I said, "Hey man, like, if that shark did bite my foot, like, we were 2 hours from shore."
Right.
And you know, and at that, we were 2 hours from the shore. of Hurricane Katrina devastated Louisiana. This was February of 2006.
Right.
That we were shooting that. Like, what the f- was the plan? You know, like what were we going to do if I got bit?
Right.
And Jeff Tremaine actually said, we didn't have a plan. We got God. We got God. And, you know, and I brought this up with Knoxville on my podcast. I told him that. And I was like, you know, it's such an absurd thing to say, like, we've got God. But, like, if you look at all of our history with the things that we've gotten away with and everything, like, it's almost impossible not to lend something to that, you know?
Oh,
to
yeah.
The idea that there's, like, a network of guardian angels looking after us, you know, like, protecting us. And it's an interesting thing. But, yeah, that was a ready to die bit for sure.
Has there been any other ready to die stunts that you've done?
I mean, shoot, like we had that show Wild Boys, which there, you know, there was anytime you're messing around with big cats, with, you know, venomous reptiles, with, you know, bears, there was a lot of that. And, you know, every once in a while people will, you know, like, I'm actually going to make a video called Times I Could Have Died. And
right.
It's very Wild Boys heavy from the TV show that we made way back in the day. Mm-hmm. We made this nature show called Wild Boys, and there was a lot of shenanigans with apex predators. But it wasn't even filming for Wild Boys. There was one where we were filming a Nintendo commercial, and they had me up in a tree. And there was, they had like chicken, like tied to the tree or some, they wanted me like out on this limb of the tree with my legs dangling down. They wanted like these two African lions, like jumping up and like clawing and just barely missing my, my feet. And that was like the shot that they were out to get, you know? And so I climb up the tree. They haven't brought the lions in yet. But the tree, I remember the director said, what, like, somebody said, I asked, what's to stop the lions from climbing up this tree? You know, like why is the lions not going to climb up the tree and kill me?
Right.
And the animal expert on the set, he said, oh, lions don't climb trees. You know, like, yeah, lions don't climb trees. And then the director boards the tree and goes, that is a pretty mellow tree, though. and then they bring in the lions. They bring in the lions. They say action. The first thing the lion does is climb right up the tree.
No.
And I'm like, yeah, and it climbs right up the tree. And it's like right on me. And I thought that I was actually in that moment. I thought that it was done, you know?
Right.
Like I just kind of went limp, and I was just resigned myself to that being the end. And all I can say is that I was like, good kitty. Good. I just kept saying good kitty. And that was like, that was probably the hairiest moment ever. Like, you got people screaming like, oh, get the ladder, like, you know, like, and you know, it looked a little bit, at the end of the day, it looked a little bit like a love fest, but the lion was like over my back, you know, like, yeah, it was nuts, man.
Well, see, that's the thing, too, the difference between the animals. Like, you're talking about a shark in the ocean. You're talking about a lion climbing a tree. Those are very dangerous, you know, moments. The bees on your dick.
The bees is minor. I mean, you got to get stung like 99 times to die from.
Which were the ones that were kind of the most disgusting to do? If you even have that, because it seems like you're up for almost anything.
Yeah, I mean, the sweatsuit was pretty bad. The porta potty with all the poo in it was pretty gross.
Let's talk about that one, because that's pretty gnarly, even just doing that stunt if there was no poo in it.
Yeah, for sure. What was most notable about that one for me is that they have like OSHA, was it like occupational safety, these companies, this like organization that makes rules about like safety on the set. And OSHA has a rule that you're not allowed to, like, I come into much contact with human excrement. So that like was a wrinkle for the porta potty stunt. But believe it or not, they, in order to satisfy the OSHA thing, there was no rule against interacting with dog poop.
Okay.
So they were able to find a company which would sell, you could buy as much dog shit as you wanted. And the name of the company was We Do Do Do. And they literally bought like enough dog shit to fill up the porta potty like multiple times because they were ready to do it more than once. Thankfully, thankfully it was a one and done. But yeah, so it was filled with dog shit. It was super gross. And other than the dog shit, I think it was really reasonably pretty safe. I had a 5-point harness, like everything was rigged. Pretty, I mean, it looked cool. But yeah, I wouldn't classify that as a particularly dangerous one.
Well, I'm not dangerous, but they're putting you on like the reverse, like the rubber band at the fair and shooting you straight up in the air.
Right. Yeah, and it's genius too. I know that idea began as it was supposed to be thrown off a bridge, but then they changed it to this catapult situation, which was really genius because by sending it up, then at its peak, at the very top of the launch, and then when it started, then you've got the poo coming out at the top, as opposed to off the bridge, it would just be kind of a mess. But yeah, that was crucial, man.
I'm sure you've had quite a few injuries. What's like some of the injuries that you've had from doing all these stunts? Because you mentioned you're not invincible.
Oh, dude, I've been getting hurt more badly, and all my worst injuries are in the last 5 years. Filming Jackass Forever, I snapped my collarbone, and now I got 2 plates in my collarbone.
How did you do that?
It didn't even make the movie. I was being towed behind a horse. Like I was riding on a wakeboard behind a horse being towed, and there was a ramp that I was supposed to ride up the ramp and across all these barrels, but I just kept wimping out and letting go of the rope, and I let go of the rope and bounced off the ramp on my collarbone.
Oh, gotcha.
And kind of flipped over and it snapped. I just got hardware out of my ankle. I did, I had a plate and like 11 screws in my ankle from something I was just doing for YouTube. I was jumping a skateboard off a porta potty while my buddy Danny Way crashed a car through the porta potty. And it was just like, it was just too tall. It was, I was jumping from like 8 feet in the air with like no momentum. Normally moving like that. I was just straight down.
Just fell
and,
off.
Shattered my ankle on that one. And the other worst one was I had third degree burns on 15% of my body from a stunt that I did for my second comedy special.
What did you do?
It was like an idea. Like we were just blowing up my living room and doing all these crazy explosion stunts. At the end of it, we poured rocket engine fuel all over the living room floor, and I laid in it and did snow angels like while they lit it. And laying in a bed of rocket engine fuel while my buddy lit it was that was too much, man. I messed up on that one.
Is it harder to do the stunts now that you're sober than it was when you were on substances?
I mean, I suppose, but not really, man. Like taking away drugs and alcohol doesn't make me any less of an attention whore. maybe to some extent, but if there is any extent to which it was more difficult to do stunts sober, like what compensated for that was my desire to prove that I still had that in me, I had a little kind of thing in my head, like, oh man, like I can't let anybody think sobriety turned me into a pussy, So I would push myself a little bit harder to make up for that, I think.
As we start to wind down here, you are on tour, about to go on tour with your comedy show. So kind of talk about that and how that is going on the road and the stuff that you talk about when you're
Yeah, I mean, like you and I met for the first time in, was it Wales or?
Wales, yeah. Yeah, Cardiff.
Maybe. I'm not, it was somewhere in the UK.
It was Wales, for sure, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that was way back in 2011, I want to say. And, you know, I was doing stand-up, but, you know, I started touring doing stand-up in 2010. And, you know, I just was grinding it out for the longest time. And over the course of the last, 12 years, gradually my comedy, like I did my first stand-up comedy special, and it was very much, just me and a microphone. You know, I did stunts on the stage intermittently throughout the special, but it was just what happened on the stage. And then when I put together my second hour and I made my second comedy special, by that point, I made it into a multimedia project. But the stunts that I filmed for it and the footage that I included throughout was all added in post-production. Mm. And then, you know, when I set about putting together my third touring show, which is the one I'm doing now, it's called The Bucket List. That one, I wanted to make it, I didn't want to live in the past anymore. You know, I felt like, right. my comedy up to that point had been an exercise in sort of regaling all the craziest stuff in my past. And that started to feel like it was getting a bit depressing. Right. I wanted to do all new stuff and like make all the comedy about like new stuff. And I wanted to bring the multimedia component on tour with me. So I set about like filming what I called my bucket list stunts, which is just like these ideas that I had been sitting on for the longest time, but never really ever expected to go through with, you know, like super, super, like a lot of it's just flagrantly illegal. Like I had a medical professional in disguise administer general anesthesia drugs into an IV in my arm while I was hauling ass on a bicycle, you know, like, which is so like, it's so ambitious. It's so illegal. It's right. So sketchy. Everything about that was just deliciously over the top, you know, and that's like part of the course for what I did for this new tour. I had another idea for skydiving. I said that if I ever went skydiving, I would be butt naked with the tandem guy strapped to my back, and I would be in the airplane like furiously masturbating and time it so that like I simultaneously fall out of the plane as I'm blowing a load everywhere. And that I did that for my bucket list. I had another one, like I wanted to I heard a joke when I was a little kid. It was what's the definition of macho? It's a man who jogs home from his own vasectomy. Oh, and I always wanted to be macho, and I was like, dude, that was just an idea that I had since I was a kid. Like, it's like I'm gonna get a vasectomy and do like way more than just jog. And I called it the Vasectomy Olympics. And so I did that for the bucket list. Like everything I did for the bucket list is like the next level of insanity. And I made this crazy show out of it where, like, you know, I walk you through the list, like and particularly the implications of going through with these stunts on my relationship with my fiance, which is kind of over the top as well. And then throughout the show, after each bit, I screen the footage of the stunt happening. So okay. Like the actual show itself is multimedia, and the footage that I screen in the show is so f***ed up that in the majority of the cities we go to, like during the show, like we'll have full grown men passing out in their seat.
Ah, nice.
Like, I mean, we get about like, you know, about one or two dudes in like almost every city, and it's crazy. I've never heard about anybody fainting from watching a Jackass movie, and they're absolutely fainting in their seats. What you know? I mean, they wake up and everybody's okay. So, you know, while it's creepy, it's you know, nothing bad has happened. But man, is that awesome to be able to say that? You know, I finally made something so crazy that people are fainting when they watch it.
Did you mentioned did this something that's so highly illegal? Was there ever any stunts that you did either on Jackass or on your own that got shut down by the cops going, absolutely not, you're not doing this?
I mean, when I climbed up the crane with the inflatable killer whale trying to protest SeaWorld, that was I've been arrested a lot. I've had a lot of arrests. I know that, like, on filming for Jackass, cops got involved. I mean, quite a few times there was, you know, they went to like the car wash and they had like all hair and blood all over the car. Like, so, you know, they like Knox. I had a little bit of an obsession with fake blood for a while, and that got the cops involved more than once.
Gotcha. They thought it was real, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So last few things you mentioned for Jackass Forever, that now as you guys are getting older, you don't want to ever to be tragic or pathetic. But the movie's another huge hit, number one movie in America, like we said. Do you think you would ever consider doing another one, maybe as older guys?
I now that they've introduced, you know, fresher, younger talent to the mix, I gotta believe that that's an exercise in breathing life and future into the franchise. I mean, I don't know. I know that there are no immediate plans for making another one, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that was the move to bring in even more, you know, new people. And you know, and again, it's what I said before, like, it's so important to me that I do it because I want to and not because I have to. And I've really carved out that situation for myself. I'm very fortunate that I'm perfectly fine if there's never any more Jackass ever again. And, you know, I'm even better if there is. So I'm good to go either way.
Well, and because you've done a great job in diversifying yourself with all the different things that you do, which is the way to be.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
I definitely hustled, man. I, as have you, man. With
yes, sir.
You know,
yes,
like you had the wrestling and then the music, and I had the Jackass and then the comedy, and we're both prolific hustlers, man. with all your books, man. I just finished my second book.
Nice.
This September. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm dying. And, like, my first book was a New York Times bestseller, and I'm dying to do whatever it takes to get my second book to be number one New York Times bestseller. So
it's just continuing on the experiences that you've had over the past few years.
It's not like everybody strongly urged me, or they advised me, not to try to make a memoir part two. Mm-hmm. You know, they really wanted, they said it's important to have an angle on it. So I went with, you know, I told the literary agent and my co-author, I said, hey, you know, for what it's worth, my new bucket list tour starts off, you know, my first joke is I say, I'm in a terrible situation. I'm Steve-O in my 40s. And I'm like, that always gets a big laugh, you know, like, you know, like a book about confronting middle age, you know, mm-hmm. Even if it was like sort of a tongue-in-cheek guide to middle age. And mm-hmm. That's what we landed on.
That's
and,
great.
I mean, sure enough, it was a vehicle for me to, like, just unload all the crazy that's gone on in my life, you know, since the last book came out. And, you know, I'd have it no other way. But it's framed as, it's called A Hard Kick in the Nuts, What I've Learned from a Lifetime of Terrible Decisions. So I'm imparting the wisdom gleaned from you know, all of my exploits with you know, everything that's crazy. And, you know, it's comedy, it's serious, it's like, it's everything kind of mixed into one. And man, it's such a good book. I really want it to be number one.
I will definitely promote it when it comes out because I love your stories. You're always a great talker, great storyteller. Last question for you. It's a two-parter, one that I have to answer, one that you have to answer. Your favorite stunt that you've ever done, if there could be one, if a stunt was on a tombstone, and I'll tell you what mine is the jellyfish sombrero, which is so ridiculous. I need you to tell me a little bit about that because this thing was huge and I've been stung by a jellyfish before and it hurts like a mother. So that's mine. And then, so tell me about that and then tell me yours.
Dude, I'm so so grateful and so proud for you to say that because that was just something that I filmed on my own for my YouTube channel, you know.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
And I really, you know, I'll have people, you know, over the years, like, you know, people, of course, you know, they'll come up and say, oh man, like, I love the Jackass movies. I love you and Jackass. And that's always cool to hear. But whenever anybody comes up and says, man, I really love your YouTube content, you know, or I really love your podcast, like that's right. That's so much more meaningful to me because that's like somebody who's paying attention and somebody who is aware of like what's going on currently, you know. And right. for you to point to the jellyfish sombrero, which was it remains the most viewed video I've ever put on YouTube.
Ridiculous.
It was ridiculous for sure, and it's crazy. Like there was an idea, and I pitched it for you know a number of times that with like a man o' war. Or a box right. jelly, you know, I was like, oh, let's be gnarly. Let's, you know, and the general consensus is that man o' wars and box jellyfish, that's just like too much, you know, that's pushing it too far. It's kind of like going after a rattlesnake. And the jellyfish sombrero, I believe the species of jellyfish is a moon jelly. And moon jelly is not a box jelly. It's not like particularly dangerous. And I mean, yeah, it hurt, right. But it hurt like a mother fact, but it didn't hurt for long and it didn't do like real damage. And with all the stunts, you know, there's some stunts that are so gnarly and don't look like anything. You know, there was the one I did where I jumped out of a sea glider, like this like water world airplane. It was like a hang glider with a propeller.
Right.
And, you know, it was like probably like 40 feet above the ocean going probably like 40 miles an hour. And I jumped out of it. And, dude, that was the most brutal slam ever. Knocked the wind out of me. Oh, I was just like thought I had like internal like damage, and I considered that the gnarliest, most epic thing I'd ever done. I showed it to my dad. He's like, it didn't look like anything, you know, like underwhelming. And my dad's right too, because anytime I've ever posted that footage on social media, it doesn't engage, you know. Right. And here it was the most brutal thing, and it just doesn't. So some things look gnarly and they're not that gnarly. Some things are really gnarly. They don't look gnarly.
Right.
And the jellyfish sombrero on that cost benefit, you know, it's like all the benefit, and it really wasn't that gnarly.
Okay. So didn't they sting you in tentacles and everything?
I mean, the ones that were on the beach were dead. And so there wasn't much that happened there. And then the one in the water stung the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
you know, but it didn't do much damage and it went away pretty quick.
What's your favorite stunt you've ever done?
I mean, dude, like, you know, clearly I love that jumping out of the airplane with no parachute into the ocean, but it didn't resonate with the, right. it didn't hit the mark that much. I mean, like a big one that I did recently, and I did it for my bucket list tour, because I wasn't happy with the general anesthesia on the bike. And somebody told me that they said, I have a way that you can finish your anesthesia bit without worrying about your sobriety. And that what they were talking about was putting a 4-inch needle into my spine. Oof. And injecting a drug into my spinal cavity, which would paralyze me. And that I would become paralyzed while in the midst of a full sprint. And
wow,
that one, yeah, that's about as high level as it gets, you know, as far as like illegal, sketchy, life threatening, like, you know, like hilarious. And that checked every box, man. And that was every bit as gnarly and looked every bit as gnarly. I'm gonna go with the Spinal Tap. That just was, like, and everyone can see it on my bucket list shirt too. Yeah, Joe, I collapsed like a baby giraffe being born while I was running. Dude, it was
Well, dude, dude, great talking with you, man, and congratulations on all your success. And congratulations that you're still with us and have all your faculties after all the crazy shit you've done.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. I'm as shocked as you are, brother. And you know, go us, man. Like, you know, it's I remember when I had you on my podcast, it was just really rad, man. Like, we were talking about how here we are, like, old, man. Like, with yeah. Like, we're old, and we're not just still getting away with it, but we're thriving, man. And
that's right, man.
You know, like, I really respect your hustle. I respect your evolution. And, you know, I'm glad to call you a bro, man. It was a no-brainer to do this with you. It's been an honor. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate that, man. Let's do more shit together in the future. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And say what's up to my homeboy, Mike Calta.
I will, for sure, man.
Thanks,
Steve-O. Right on, Jericho, man.
Talk to you, brother.
Yep, bye-bye.
All right, thanks to Steve-O. Go see Jackass Forever this weekend, number one movie in the country. And check out Steve-O on the Bucket List Tour. Something's going to be very fun. He's on the road now. You can get tickets at steveo.com. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Wednesday.